We're doing Chazon Ish, Emunah u'Bitachon. We're up to the middle of page Mem Aleph. And the Chazon Ish was tackling one of the more complex issues we have, and that is the tendency of people to ask themselves, isn't the rabbi partial? And the Chazon Ish had said that this concept that a person is going to be partial, and well, it's a double-edged sword. On the one end, yes, we're all partial, and yet we see the Torah says that we trust the person in giving halachic ruling, that their partiality won't skew their ruling. And the Chazon Ish gave numerous examples where a person can own a liquor shop, and he tells you that his liquor is kosher, and that he sold his chametz on Pesach, and he's trusted, even though he definitely has a huge interest in selling that liquor. It's a huge loss to him if it would not be kosher. A person can slaughter an animal, and that could be his last animal, and he's very poor, and he has nothing but that animal, and yet he is trusted when he says that animal is kosher. So even though we are partial, we are trusted. But then the Torah gives us this ruling that in certain areas of justice, we say, don't trust the person when he's been bribed. So the Chazon Ish said that's the exception, that's not the rule. The rule is that we trust the person to overcome their partiality. The exception is that when a person has been bribed, comes the Torah and says you can't trust him. Then he shouldn't give ruling. And even in that, when it comes to judging a case between a man and his fellow man, the Torah says you can't rule if you receive the bribe at the time of judgment. The Torah doesn't say if one of the people is your friend or your enemy, you're not allowed to be judge on the case. The Torah says if someone gave you a bribe, you cannot be judge on the case. But the fact that you know him, the fact that he's your buddy, well, that doesn't preclude you being judge. Rak shushvino. The Torah says, when can't you be judge? When it's your best friend. When it's your best man. Then you can't be judge in his case. Or sono shelo diberim mogim in yamim. Ledat yesh omrim. There's an opinion that says, if you hate the guy to the point where you guys haven't spoken for 3 days because you can't stand him, that's a level of enmity where you can't be judge in his case. Even though our nature will for sure instinctively be slanted to the favor of our friend or against our enemy. So even so, the Torah says, I trust the judge. Meaning two people come to a court case before you and one of them gets on your nerves, but you're nice to him. And the other one you like, you're allowed to judge them. We trust you that won't steer your heart incorrectly. It's only if you hate him to the point where you don't talk to him, or you like him to the point where he's one of your best friends, then you shouldn't be the judge. Because a bribe is different. And with a bribe, the Torah said, it defiles your ability to be honest. And that's not present here. Just because he's your friend, that's not a bribe. It's not the same thing. And so the Torah completely trusted the wise man that he will see in honesty what the truth is. And he won't let his heart be swayed because of his nature. Because it's second nature to a chacham. Perfect. It's second nature to a chacham that he overcomes his partiality. And truth is the path in which he proceeds. You know, that's how he decides which way to go. He verifies what's the truth, what am I supposed to do, and that's what lightens up his path. And it's his righteousness that will ensure that he gets the ruling in accordance with justice. So the Chazon Ish says, when you ask yourself, wait, isn't the rabbi partial? The answer is, well, he's human, but he's supposed to overcome that. In the area of justice, so there the Torah gave exceptions. The Torah said, don't think you can overcome it if someone tried to bribe you directly. ולא עוד, אלא שאמרו במקום פסידה, ודין ישדינה לנפשו, ולא חשדו להוות דינו. Even in instances where he could have a loss, and he has to rule for himself. His wife asks him, is this kosher or not? It's going to cost him money if it isn't. He could still give a halachic ruling. And our sages say in Baba Basra, Haydayana demitkari ledinu mafkin mine mamona bedin, lav shmei dayan, ולא לימדו עליו זכות מפני אונס הנגיעה. והנה פסלו חכמים בנוגע בעיבור שנה. We have one more exception. You remember the Chazon Ish quoted that when it comes to deciding if it's a leap year, our sages said, we don't take in a king, we don't take in a kohen gadol, because they're going to be very affected by the decision, and so they're partial. So here again, the sages said, deciding if it's a leap year, the Talmud says in Tractate Rosh Hashanah, that's called mishpat, that's like giving justice. V'yavina le'dinei mishpat, so it has those guidelines. V'chol ze b'chlal chukei ha-mitzvah, but the Chazon Ish says, this isn't something we would have said logically. This is what's called a chok. The Torah came. The Torah told us something we would not have said. The Torah said, in other areas, I trust him not to be partial. Here, I'm not trusting him. But that's what's called a chok. V'chol ze b'chlal chukei ha-mitzvah shehusanu mimekach shochad. The Torah gave it that distinction that it's like taking a bribe. U'mehem psulei d'rabanan, u'mehem midat chasidut. You know that if a person gambles, they're not allowed to be a witness. That's a rabbinic institution, right? The rabbi said he's not involved in inhabiting the world. He's not leading a productive life. He makes his money gambling. So he can't be a witness. That's a rabbinic institution. And there are other things which the rabbi said out of piety. ומה אמרו רבי יוסף, רבי יהודה, ורבי... Yeah. The way the Rambam rules on Shulchan Aruch is that it's someone that's his livelihood, gambling. That's a.
If it's like the World Cup final in soccer, you know, and your team is there, you say, okay, I put 10
Right. Whether it's proper or not is a different question, but that doesn't disqualify him, right?
Like the people who would go to a casino every day for so many years and they would go and make like $200-$300 each day and they just stop and then,
Right. Even someone, which I don't think such a person exists, but even someone who is always successful at the casino, like you're saying, he makes $200-$300 a day, I don't think such a person exists. And as far as I understand, the casinos are rigged that you can't...
Card counting is to overcome that.
Yeah, but they're not allowed to be there. They're not allowed to be there.
Those guys who were winning so much money, what they did was they didn't make so much money that they would get caught. They would just say, oh, we're making just a little bit. And like that little bit over time, the casinos were all right with that.
Okay. So if that's his livelihood, look, you're saying there's a science with which you could win in gambling.
Blackjack.
I don't know. What? You could win in blackjack.
The slots are for sure rigged.
Okay.
I know that industry very well. And I can tell you, they do not have chandeliers and free trips and Adelson didn't make $1 billion so you win. There was a system of card counters years ago, but then they started using multiple decks and borrowing about 40 cards at the end. I mean, obviously you have to have some people win once in a while, otherwise no one would ever come. But you can guarantee in the long run, 99% of people lose, and no system. They love people with systems. They send little notes for you, and people who think, they sit there with charts. The only way you can do well is if you're on the other side of the table as an owner. And even then, you may lose the next world. That's the rabbi, because they're encouraging people to squander their money.
So he was talking about card counters.
You can do count cards, but you have to. Of course, let's say you play the game, 21 blackjack.
Yeah.
Let's say you count the 52 cards in. and there's, at the end of the deck, there's five cards left. There's 3 8s and 2 7s. The dealer in the casino has to hit on 16 or less, stick on 17 or more. So he has five cards left. Any three cards add up to more than 21, so he's fucked. So if theoretically you're betting $20 a hand, and then you bet 50,000 or whatever, you know, of course you'll win if you can count. You know that. You know the deck. The deck is sometimes in your favor. But all those things the casinos have put in, well, as I say, they put in like 8 decks, and they bury the last 40 cards, that kind of thing. And they deal from shoes. So that industry is, you know, you know, that won't be it today. Hey, anyway.
Sorry. Okay.
Came a little late, but the subject I had is a little bit of experience.
No, okay, but back to here. So Chazal disqualified such a person rabbinically. And yet, we quoted from the Talmud that there were rabbis who sensed that they were partial, that when someone even brought them their payment a day early, they said, I can't judge you anymore. That's not because halachically they were disqualified. That's because they sensed that they were shifted, that they were touched. And when a person is greater, so then he has a greater tendency in his sharpness, where they say, wait a second, am I 100% sure I'm impartial now? And if not, they say, okay, so then I pull out because I want to get it right. She says, Sod Briat Adam. Ve'efshar she'midat chasidut u'gam besod ha'yitzira, u'kshenitan koach bashochad la'aver, nitan koach bashochad shel midat chasidut la'aver chasid. He says, you know, sometimes it could be that out of piety, a person can again be misguided and say, look, I'm touched. So he says, yes, we have examples where a person's partiality disqualifies them. That's because Hashem built into our nature something different, where aside from our regular partiality, a bribe will affect us. Sometimes a great person will be sensitive and say, I was just affected in a way that I cannot be confident I'm honest. But barring those exceptions, the rule is that we trust them, that they're overcoming their partiality and they're going to be honest in spite of their partiality. Because like Chazanish said, in many instances, you have to give a halachic ruling and you are partial. He says, but bottom line, look at what where we get to if we say you can just suspect everyone of being partial. You have instances where the Torah says, I trust them, they could rule. Every day we have new questions that come up, halachically. We have new questions. I please don't answer this question, but I want to pose a question, and again, it's not. I don't think it's proper to answer it, but think about it for a second. How many people sitting in this classroom were born from in vitro fertilization? I don't know. But I can guarantee you that in your child's classroom, they're going to have at least one or two classmates that were born from in vitro fertilization. We have new questions, and it's very relevant to us to know. Does the child get his father's lineage, his mother's lineage? Does he have to convert? Is he a Jew? He was born in he was created in a test tube. Ah, he came out of a woman's womb. Now, what happens if they took a donor sperm? Does that make him a bastard? Is he a mamzer? So we have questions that arise every day. And you know what? Why was Ben-Gurion fighting for the law of who's a Jew? Because he had a son that married a non-Jewish woman. And so it was very important to Ben-Gurion that his grandson be called Jewish by the state. But when we give halachic ruling, even though new questions come up on a daily basis, and these new questions are relevant to many of us, and sometimes to the rabbi who's giving the ruling, the Torah says, I trust him. I trust him to overcome his partiality and get it right. Or if he sees he's too partial, he'll say someone else has to rule on it. When we speak about ethics, so we're very stringent about not destroying our traits. We're very stringent about not saying bad words about one another, even thinking bad things about one another, certainly not speaking badly about one another. Even if what we're saying is true, certainly we shouldn't lie about other people. And if you sit there and say, I know he's a rabbi, but come on, you know, he wants to make easy money, so he gave this ruling. Or he has stocks in that company, so he gave that ruling. I gave an example last night when Chacham Ovadia ruled about the chickens of Atara. So it's his hechsher, and there was a big question about 10,000 chickens. So you couldn't say, he's got money there. So that's why he ruled it's kosher. That's what's called mevazet tamid chacham. That's deriding a tamid chacham, and that's one of the guidelines. That's one of the definitions of an apikores. V'harei ta'ut ba'alacha mevala et hakol. Achrei she'alacha psuka shel chacham she'yamod bifnei negiya. U'machet yesh kan imagid she'ivet et ha'mishpat mipnei negiyato. A person will tell you, all I mean is, maybe I shouldn't eat that chicken because we're all partial. And if he gave that ruling, then maybe it stems from his partiality and maybe he made a mistake. And people try to give excuses. They say it's natural. We're all that way. The Chazanish says it's like pouring out the wine, holding on to the barrel. He says that the essence of your tradition is that you're trusting that people gave it over without their own partiality in the story. And if you're going to start saying, well, maybe he just gave that ruling because he's got 10,000 chickens on the line, so then you got a problem. You have a problem because you're undermining our whole tradition. The Chazon Ish has a concluding paragraph, but we'll pause on that right now.